Thank you very much, Bill, for taking a very complex subject and dissecting it for us very carefully and proposing a solution. Bill is now at the table, and I'm going to ask other members to come up for a panel discussion of Bill's proposal and the significance of the Woodward Building. As I introduce the members of the panel, I ask that they come up and join Bill at the table. First is Peter Byrne, the Mayor's Agent for Historic Preservation, also the Associate Dean at Georgetown Law, and Director of Georgetown Environmental Law and Policy Institute. Next is Tersh Boesberg. From 2000 to 2010, he was Chair of the D.C. Historic Preservation Review Board. He is now Professor of Law of Historic Preservation at the Georgetown Law Center and Goucher College. Our third member is Cornish Hitchcock. Con is an attorney who won the Woodward case for the Committee of 100, which marked the first time that a D.C. court overturned a decision allowing demolition of a historic structure. He is the managing member of the Hitchcock Law Firm. I'd like to start the panel by directing my first question to Peter. Peter, you just heard Bill suggest that some of your discretion be taken away when considering demolition permits. What do you think of that?
Let me first say how pleased I am to be here. I'm your neighbor. I live two blocks down E Street. And I'm also an extremely proud member of the Georgetown Law Faculty of the tremendous performance of Bill King, both in the paper and his presentations. I have to say, first of all, that I'm speaking on my own behalf and not on behalf of the District of Columbia Government or the Office of Planning. I want to say that, first of all, that the special merit provision is really important. And D.C. has the most thoroughly developed jurisprudence of special merit of any jurisdiction in the country. Now, why is it important? I think all of us will agree that sometimes other public values are more important than historic preservation. Historic preservation is extremely important, but not in every case does it outweigh competing interests. I'll talk about that a little bit. Secondly, having a special merit provision takes pressure off the designation process. So Bill showed you a picture of the buildings on H Street, and none of them are designated. And today there is resistance to designation because people are concerned that it will freeze development. Well, the special merit allows there to be a coherent process to evaluate whether it allows you to designate properties and then consider the question of whether there are public reasons to allow demolition and new construction later on. And third, it creates a safety valve, a political safety valve. One sees in other cities, it's shown in resistance to designation. It can also be shown in peeling back the historic preservation law. When it leads to results that citizens find intolerable. So the question is then, does our special merit provision work well or poorly? I agree with Bill's concerns that the special merit provision be applied fairly and predictably, and then it rely largely on values established in the legislative process. But I think his proposal is actually wrong. And for two reasons. One is, as he said, many of the projects that are justified under community benefits could also be justified under the land use planning prompt. That is, a good lawyer can pitch it either way. I'll give you an example of a case that I decided not too long ago in the Anacostia Historic District, where there were two very dilapidated wooden residential buildings from the late 19th century on Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue. And D.C. proposed to move them into the interior of the Anacostia Historic District in order to construct 140 units of affordable housing with retail on the ground floor, which is not mentioned in Morty. I found that that was a project of special merit, in part because the DC had done a good job of planning where to move the two houses. It wasn't just sort of dropping them somewhere. And I thought that that affordable housing is one of the greatest needs that we have in the District of Columbia. By the way, that's quite established under the comprehensive plan, and the opinion cites the comprehensive plan repeatedly for all the reasons that Bill suggested one should. But is affordable housing really a matter of land use planning, or is it a matter of a larger social justice concern? Another case I'll mention briefly is involved the Duke Ellington High School, which, as you, I'm sure you all know, is a specialty arts high school, and has labored under the handicap of having terrible theater facilities. And DC finally ponied up the money to build a world-class performance space within the school. The plan provided for retaining these, and in fact restoring the historic features on the front of the building, but demolishing most of the interior in order to build this performance space, actually two performance spaces. Mayor's agent held that that was a project of special merit, that it was really important to the District of Columbia to have a first-class performance high school, and that it was necessary to do this demolition in order to have that. Is that a matter of land use planning? Or is that a matter of community benefits having a high priority for the city? I think it's more the latter. So the concern, though, that Bill has about excessive discretion is a valid one. So how does it work? Well, we have not just, I don't just do investigations, we have evidentiary hearings. And the mayor's agent has to decide the case on the basis of the record developed at a hearing. As Bill says, it's subject to review by the DC Court of Appeals. We are developing a body of precedent. I think that Church Boseberg will talk about that somewhat. But the Georgetown Law Library now collects the opinions of the mayor's agent, and lawyers who appear before the mayor's agent cite precedent. So that creates a kind of predictability or regularity to the process, which seems adequate. So, I'm not going to tell you that every decision by the mayor's agent is correct, but I think we do have a process that is part of the rule of law and is based primarily on public decisions made by the legislature and other parts of the district government and then applied by the mayor's agent in the case before him. So, I'll leave it there.
Thank you. Would the other panel members like to comment, and in your comments incorporate the answer to the question of why not do away with the special merit provision, as some have suggested? Tersh, would you like to start?
Sure.
Mechanical aptitude. Mechanical aptitude was never my forte. Want to thank Bill for a wonderful presentation. I knew him last year when he was only a student, and I can see now he's prepared to argue before the Supreme Court. I mean, he's done a wonderful job. So, even though I disagree with his conclusion, I think the reasoning is superb, and that's all that counts. Well, it's nice to see so many people who have devoted such a large portion of their lives to historic preservation and planning in the city. I just want to say a word about Jim Nathanson, a former council member of mine from Ward 3, interloping here at Capitol Hill, and Charles Robertson from the DuPont Circle, Nancy Messger, of course, from Capitol Hill, are both members. Charles retired from the Historic Preservation Review Board. They've devoted countless hours to historic preservation. Well, every night before I go to sleep, I pray to God that Peter Berg will stay in his job as long as there is snow on Mount Everest. And we are so incredibly fortunate, as many of you who work at with the Capitol Hill Restoration Society know, we have a very conscious historic preservation program and philosophy in the District of Columbia, and it's only possible, really, because of people like Dick Wolf and Capitol Hill Restoration Society. You keep a political base for historic preservation in order for the council members and the mayor to understand that historic preservation is an important component of our lives. That is the most important protection, regardless of the mayor's age, regardless of the mayor, regardless of anybody, that we can have is an informed citizenry acting through their representatives. And so I salute you because you are responsible for historic preservation. Now, go to the question, sorry. I would keep the law as it is. I don't think it's too general. I don't think there's too much flexibility. I'll give you one example of why leaning only on the comprehensive plan is wrong. When I was on the Historic Preservation Review Board, we had a proposal come from the developer and the owners of the Hay Adams Hotel. Well, they wanted to put an extra floor on the Hay Adams. As you know, it's right on Lafayette Park, so the corner of 16th. And it's a very important building. And there are many benefits to keeping that park and keeping low rise for everyone. Not that one well-placed hotel owner should have that extra floor. So we were giving it a hard time in the Historic Preservation Review Board because it didn't seem to make sense. It didn't go with the other buildings. Well, the next thing I realized, Did you hear the first part about the Hay Adams Hotel? Okay. The next thing I realize is I look at the a revised version of a comprehensive plan, which I had never seen, and they're tucked into section 1608.11, our organized representatives voting to adopt this sentence. This is one of the goals. Retain existing hotel uses by allowing and encouraging the expansion of those uses, including, get this, the addition of one floor, approximately 16 feet in height, subject to coordination with federal security needs, to the Hay Adams Hotel. Thanks very much, the lawyer that got to that council member. The problem is there is no magic bullet. The comprehensive plan is the magic bullet. The social benefits aren't a magic bullet. You're walking a very thin line in order to allow for progress, in order to allow for certain situations. I mean, you want a new hospital, you want new schools, you want a new fire station, you want a ballpark, I mean, you want a convention center. Now, the protection then is to have an informed citizenry, a law like we have, and hopefully a mayor's agent who is well trained as current.
Thank you very much. Let me turn now to Con Hitchcock and ask a question. We've heard about the good decisions we're getting out of the current mayor's agent. We've heard about the use of precedent. Can you tell us from 1978, when the Historic Preservation Act was enacted, until the time of the Woodward case in 1990, was there a general pattern of the decisions coming out of the mayor's agent at that time?
Yes, the developer always won. That's the short answer. If I could, first of all, I want to congratulate Bill on winning the prize. I'm not sure I could have written as perceptive a paper when I was a law student, but I didn't have to reach Boasberg as a professor. And I also want to, as a former Capitol Hill resident for 12 years and lived down the 11th Street a little bit from Dick and Mimi, so I'm honored to be included in the program here tonight, and wonderful to see so many people. But let's back up a step in terms of special merit and where did it come from. When the Preservation Act was enacted in the late 1970s, the concern was, is preservation law going to prevent the old convention center from getting built? That was the paradigmatic special merit idea, something large, something that would be good for the economy of the city, something that would have a lot of benefits, broadly speaking. And it reminded me a bit of how the first planned unit development came about. It was also on the Zoning Commission, which was for the Watergate complex. And so you can have very good standards that are written to try to build safety valves into the system, as Peter indicated, and create a little flexibility. But the question is, how can you create that objective body of law so that there is some measure of predictability? I would say that, I mean, what was the special merit in the Woodward Building case to go back? First of all, why did the developer want to tear it down? The real answer was there was no parking. And that was seen as a real detriment to commercial development of the other buildings on 15th Street, that there was no parking. And of course, it was never articulated as much. It was, you know, exemplary architecture. It was this, it was that. And just before we got to the hearing, all of a sudden, after consultation with the Office of Planning, we were told the special merit was two floors of housing and daycare. All very vague. But the mayor's agent at the time, this was long before Peter, said, okay, yeah, those are good benefits. Those are good things. And so, you know, we took it to the Court of Appeals and had to say, well, wait a minute. How do we answer this? What are the specifics? What do you look at objectively? After first trying to take all the prior cases that Monty mentioned and distinguish them away to say, well, yeah, it made sense in those cases, but our case is different. So after doing that, which lawyers are trained to do, we looked at some of the others, and the comprehensive plan did not support housing or daycare as an abstract proposition. The developer was just sort of responding to the sloganeering of the time. I mean, there was this going to be affordable housing? Is it going to be market rate housing? Is anyone going to live at 15th and H Streets in 1988? Where's the local delicatessen? Where's the local dry cleaners? Well, don't ask difficult questions. You know, is the daycare going to be yuppie welfare? Is it going to be market rate? Is it going to be for lower income? Just, you know, you're wasting time on these details. But the Court of Appeals didn't think so and was able to look at the comprehensive plan and say, what, you know, whatever may be, the developer really hasn't made the case here. So perhaps if the developer had done a better job, if it came up today, perhaps they might have been able to point to that. I think in terms of what special merit is, I think the idea of looking at a comprehensive plan does make some sense. The question, the concern I have is that the comprehensive plan has something for everyone. There's a lot of things in there, and you can pick and choose. I mean, the D.C. Court of Appeals recently had a zoning decision up in Brooklyn that rather suggested, rather than sort of pick and choose the phrases you like, try to look at the comprehensive plan as a whole, and if there are competing sections cited, try to reconcile all those. I mean, I'm not sure that's a perfect solution, but it is something which would try to make sure that everything that's being touted is, in fact, consistent with the other provisions. As Church points out, occasionally you get some very specific legislation written in that is really designed to guide a case. And I remember some years ago I represented some neighbors in a zoning case. And after we actually won, the comprehensive plan was changed to provide for that kind of development. Very funny thing. So. I think we're in agreement probably in the goals in terms of some objectivity and some predictability. How we get there, well, that's what lawyers do, drafting language.
Thank you, all of you, for your comments. And, Bill, this is your night, so I'm going to give you the last word here.
Thank you. So thank you all again for appearing on this panel with me. I really appreciate your feedback. The thrust of my proposal is a matter, I guess it's a separation of powers argument. The balancing test is something a semi-neutral adjudicator should do, social benefits versus historical value. And the process of defining what social benefits are to the people in D.C., that's a question that's political. It should be answered by the people and their elected representatives. And the critiques I've gotten so far don't seem to really push back on that effectively. Professor Byrne, your critique was the comprehensive plan doesn't capture, it's not broad enough to get those social justice concerns. That might be a complaint, not with my proposal, but with the comprehensive plan as we currently have it. Maybe we should expand it or develop another document that the mayor's agent can use for those purposes. Tersh, your concern was that with the comprehensive plan, the city council can slip in little exceptions all the time. That's, again, not really a complaint with my general proposal here, but a concern about accountability in government in D.C., and that's a whole other issue we should work to improve. I think generally, like Hans said, we all have the same objective here, and I think we're on the right track. So thank you. Thanks so much.